Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Rue, and we are doing a live show of Human Potential at Work. Doug Foresta, my producer and friend, is joining me, and he also has his own podcast. And so, Doug, will you reintroduce yourself to the audience?
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. This is Doug Foresta. I am the producer of Human Potential at Work. And I, among other things, but that's an important one to me. And a good friend, Deborah, you and I have known each other for almost 10 years now. So I'm very excited to be here today.
And what is your show? You also have your own show.
Oh, I've got so many shows, but I have the show that I've done for the past 6 years is Creating Change on Empower Radio. That's probably the one that I have. That's the longest. Yeah.
Great. Yep. Great. I know you're involved in a lot of podcasts. So today we want to talk about social good and social capital, which I thought was very interesting. As I was reading a report that I'm going to refer to during the show as well from the World Economic Forum. I visit that content on the World Economic Forum quite a bit since the work that I do, I think, is about the planet as opposed to, you know, just one country or, you know, or maybe just one state or region. I think it's very important that we think of all of these topics from a world perspective. So welcome to the program, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really excited about our topic today.
Yes. And we talked about this similar topic about a year ago on one of our podcasts.
Yep. And I encourage people to check that one out. It's called Should We Be Paid for Social Good?
Yes. And we got a lot of very interesting comments from that one. Yes. From people that are not paid very well, despite adding tremendous value to the
world.
Right. And, you know, some of your fellow social workers and counselors and teachers and fire people, and, you know, police officers. I mean, we go on and on and on. I mean, right now we know that we pay our very talented sports figures great money, and we love to pay our personalities, the Kim Kardashians and stuff of the world, lots and lots of money. And I'm not saying people shouldn't be paid good money, but I do really think that it's very important for us to continue to change. I think we are changing, Doug, but we really need to change and start valuing the good that people are doing in the world. And it seems like we're still way too focused on the negatives and the, you know, the thing, things, the material goods. And right. And I'm also noticing something lately, Doug, that I started noticing. I don't know if it was just the lens I was wearing after, you know, losing my mother, but I just started seeing more and more and more fear creep into the corporate conversations that I was having, especially right. The corporate conversations I was having here in the United States. I don't see. It's almost like it reminded me a bit, Doug, and I was telling you about this, reminded me a little bit of when we had our financial crisis. And it took about, at least just this was my experience, it took about 6 months for that to catch up with my small technology business. And boy, when it caught up, it wasn't our fault that happened, but it really caught up and it actually wound up driving that business under after it was all said and done. I mean, we merged with another company, but I would not have made that merger if that financial crisis hadn't happened. Now, there's a lot of reasons how I got there. That's a whole nother show. But as entrepreneurs, and you're an entrepreneur too, Doug, you know, trying to understand what is happening, what's the climate, you know, what works, what do your customers need, what do your potential customers need, and during a time of such great change and fear, and confusion, and, you know, people, you know, just taking slams at each other. It's very difficult and sometimes troubling.
I agree. And I think one of the things, you know, that you and I have been talking about, Deborah, recently off air is, tell me if you would disagree with this, but it is important it's important for us to spend money on things that we value. And I think there is a really dysfunctional, I'm going to say this, so it's not Rube Goebel saying this. This is Doug Foresta saying this. There is a really dysfunctional attitude that exists in the world that somehow, let's say, the work of human rights or the work of furthering, the lives of people, empowering, the people with disabilities or just anybody really, empowering people in general, that that work should not be paid or should be charitable or somehow it's bad if there's a profit motive or money behind it. And I think that that's a very dysfunctional attitude.
I think so too. And you know, also what I think is dysfunctional, as I'm watching what's happening with the corporations, and in 2018, we were about to move forward with several very large projects with three different corporations, and each for different reasons sort of put it on hold. And they told me frankly, they were very spooked about the, well, if we talk about the work, the really powerful work that we've done to include people with disabilities in our workforce, make sure our customers have access, really telling our stories, what we're seeing is a backlash. And people are saying, well, yeah, but what about, the LGBT community? And what about the community? And what are you doing for women? Didn't I catch you doing something wrong with women? It's all, and so we've always had that a little bit sort of really focused, corporations focus on compliance and risk, which you can't blame them, as instead of focusing on, what is right, certainly for your brand, what is right for your community, what is right for your employees, your investors, your shareholders. It's very interesting watching it. And somebody suggested to me the other day, I was talking to somebody in Geneva, and they suggested that, maybe some of these American companies were just using this as an excuse not to do anything. And there is quite a bit being done in the United States. And I was reading another report talking about the failing American, leadership and the failing, and, we're not a global leader anymore. And I thought, boy, I need to stop reading so much because come on, everybody. That's not true. The United States is an amazing country with innovation and
That's
wonder
right.
and corporations that really, really do care and are actually doing wonderful work, Doug. But I'm seeing a lot of them a little gun shy about talking about the work they're doing on social media because they're afraid of backlash.
And the idea that social capital, right? That investing in that social capital is an investment in economic development. Somehow you don't have to convince anyone that buying brownstones in a gentrified neighborhood, for example, right, is going to be this good investment and you're going to get, something out of it. But there's an investment that we have to make in people, right? And an investment that we need to make in the work that we do in order to see a return. And that's just, that is part of economic development. It
I
really
agree.
is.
I agree. And you know what we do, and we're really bad about this. And I'll use nonprofits as an example. And then I want you to tell the story about the students that you were talking to in your class about the salary and stuff. But there's this nonprofit that's doing some really good work, really powerful work, really making a difference. And they won a grant, and they were doing the work. And somebody said, "Yeah, but 30% of it is used for administration." And I thought, well,
Well,
but
so those people, administrators shouldn't make any money.
right. And also, how does this nonprofit stay in business if they don't make any money? I mean, that doesn't even make any sense to me. And so, and I thought, why are we trying to shame them for? I just thought that was ridiculous too. And I see that happening. And in this very interesting environment in the United States, as I'm listening to my customers, and I'm actually doing some things with customers. That surprises me that I have to do in this day and age, but that they just have pretty much had their resources taken away from them. And so we recently, we've been doing a lot of soul searching, at Root Global Communications, and I've been doing a lot of soul searching since it's been such an interesting year for me about, you know, are we on the right track? Are we doing the right thing? Are we adding any value? And if we are, if the corporations can't support the work and they're afraid to really talk about the contributions that they're making to society, you know, did we do this wrong? And so my team created a Patreon fund to support the show, which is interesting because when they first suggested it to me, Doug, I was like, no, we don't need to do it. It's almost like a pride thing. And then and then David Perez, who is my chief strategist officer who lives in Costa Rica, said, and also he is a young man, he's 26 and brilliant. He said, Deborah, that is how we decide who we are going to support. Right. We, the individuals, we, the people that matter, the people.
Where do we put our energy and our money exactly?
Right. And we came up with sponsorships too. So if you're a corporation and you are looking to sponsor good content, we'd love to have you as a sponsor. I actually reached out to just a few of my customers and they're like, oh, we love this. And so what I'm wondering, Doug, which we all should be doing, is when the world shifts and changes and you don't completely understand what's going on, you need to, you know, you need to figure out what the world's saying and take the right path, right? Definitely. Right. But what I'm also seeing, Doug, in this environment is all this is happening and, you know, money stops flowing towards social good, which we see all the time.
Right.
You know, you wonder, certainly you want to try and do things like we're doing, try and do different things. I mean, we're not destitute or anything, but you know, if people believe in the work we're doing, it, you know, let's give,
we want to offer people a way to, you know, to help, to be part of it.
No different, no different than anything else. And I think that's the power and the beauty of the age is that individuals can really make a difference. And I love that. But still taking it back to this social capital, you know, conversation and what is the value in, you know, what are the risks to a brand that it's interesting. My new book, Inclusion Branding, came out and I give brands all kind of, I think, helpful tips on how to tell us your story, tell the communities your stories, and tell the communities in the different countries and states and the, you know, all over the world, the regions, tell us what you're doing. If you are actively including people with disabilities in your efforts, as a family that has members with disabilities in my family, I want to know about it. And so I think others want to know about it too, but how do you balance that, Doug? So all these tips and stuff I gave in my book, what I didn't cover in the book a little bit, but I could have written a whole chapter on it is, so what happens if you go to tell your story and you start being attacked because you're not doing enough, which happens to brands all the time or individuals.
Right.
You know, I know that's what we're talking about here. And I know you have advice for your students that you give, but this is a huge, I mean, we're just talking about, you know, some of the impacts we've seen personally.
Yes.
This is a huge issue because there are so many people doing amazing work all over the world that they don't have any retirement. They can barely pay their bills. I'm thinking of this woman that does so much work in developing countries, making sure that children with disabilities have what they need to thrive. And she's so poor, and she does so much beautiful work that it sort of makes me sad that we've decided the only way that if people are doing good work, good social work, Doug, they don't deserve to be paid.
They don't deserve to be paid, right? And so a couple of things. I mean, first of all, just to say about corporate social responsibility, right? And this is something that I'm learning from, I'll give a plug to my friend Wayne Dunn, who's going to be on the program, who is a corporate social responsibility expert. And one of the things that I'm learning from him is that, first of all, if companies don't do good with profit motive, they're not going to stay in business because millennials are going to comprise most of the workforce. It's not going to be you. It's not going to be the boomers. It's not going to be the Gen Xers. It's going to be the millennials. And they want to work. They want to work and support companies that do good and stand for something.
Yes. Look, yes.
The safest thing in the world to do is nothing until it's not, you know, the safest thing to do when a predator comes is to freeze. That's why they have, you know, like a deer in the headlights. Except, have you ever seen a deer in the middle of the road and all the cars are coming and it freezes? Guess what? When the world changes, you know, the thing that you thought was safe turns out not to be so safe. And doing nothing is and staying safe is, it feels safe, but it actually isn't. So corporate social responsibility is the future. Social entrepreneurship is the future. What I tell students when I teach, counselors or social workers, is I say, don't take jobs that pay $27,000 a year. No one should take those jobs. They should be unable to fill them. I said, if you take them, you're part of the problem. You know, and I understand. You're like, but Doug, you know, I'm not going to be able to make. Listen, I understand. I started in the field for $11 an hour. You know, and I was working directly with people with disabilities. And I was managing two residential programs, two, not one. And I was making $11 an hour. And this wasn't like in 1963. This was in 2003. So it wasn't that long ago. And, those salaries haven't gone up very much at all. So I tell them, don't work for that at all. You know, like that's my statement, you know, and I say, this is my opinion, but don't take that job, because if no one takes those jobs, they will have to bring the salaries up because there'll be nobody to work. And I think what happens is that we feel as if somehow doing good and earning money, right, are incompatible. And in fact, the opposite is true. If you can't be sustainable, if you can't, you know, and this is true for corporations. Corporations make this mistake too. They say, well,
families,
we're going to create a program for people with disabilities, but we're not going to make any money on it. That's going to be our charity side. You are dishonoring and you are disempowering people with disabilities, because what you're saying is that the product or whatever it is that you think, you know, that you, however you serve people, somehow that persons with disabilities can't generate revenue from them as a community, which is a lie, right?
Right.
That somehow that should be just a charity arm. That is absolutely, we should not hold that up as a value, I think.
I agree. And I see it all the time. And I hear it all the time. I was just recently speaking to, I'm going to give him a shout out and scolding all at the same time. No, not really. But I was talking to Blackboard. I was talking to Taylor Burke, one of the managers over there dealing with accessibility. And they have created this really cool accessibility add-on, which is just part of the Blackboard system now. And or the suite of services. And he was saying, you know, well, you know, we do want to, you know, we want to do the right thing. And we did it because we really know this is going to help all of us, including people with disabilities. And, you know, we don't need to make a lot of money. As in, you need to make a ton of money at this.
That's right.
Because you should be rewarded, first of all, for doing it. And second of all, that's the way the world works. So that's why are we not supporting individuals, brands, nonprofits that are doing good work? Because Blackboard is a huge corporation, and they're all over the world, but they've done something that is going to improve lives, going to reduce risk for corporations. I mean, it's amazing. Right. So I hope they make a ton of money.
And on the other side, Deborah, I want to say something to those persons with disabilities who say, well, this is not a good company because I have a disability and they charge me for these pairs of pants.
Oh my God.
You don't get it. It doesn't work. It works both ways, right?
It does work both ways. And I'm really honored to have Gary Sheinbaum on the program in a few weeks. Yeah, he's the CEO of Tommy Hilfiger, and they have done really some amazing things. Adaptive clothing for, they started with children, they work with Runway of Dreams, and now they have a line for adults, and people are saying stuff like that. The other day, you know, somebody, I tweeted something relevant about what Tommy Hilfiger was doing, and somebody made a crack about they weren't doing enough. And I thought, and it was a person with a disability, and I thought, right. come on, right. can't we just, for a change, can't we right. really, really applaud these right. brands for doing the right thing? Can we throw them so much love right. that their competitors are like, what the right. heck, you know, I wish I was Tommy Hilfiger brand. So I wish I was Blackboard. I wish I was Mass Mutual. So instead of always telling them what they're not doing, yeah, but you didn't do it right. I mean,
you could be doing so much more.
Yeah, it's without fail. And this really does make me sad. And I say this in the book, but I very rarely to almost never meet somebody representing a corporate brand for the first time, where they don't begin the conversation with, well, we know we haven't done enough. I mean, we've got a lot of work to do. Right. They're starting with an apology. And I thought, how can't we really just honor what you have done? Now, if you've done something, then you stagnate for 10 years, fine. Well, let's criticize right. you if that's what we need to do. But it really is a shame, as you see, and you know, this kind of thing happening to organizations, individuals that are trying to do, you know, really make a difference in the world. And I then see what happens, Doug, and I'm looking through a US lens, but this is not just US, where the nonprofits start to get really scared. Everybody gets scared. And so everybody circles their wagons, you know, and in like, this nonprofit ain't going to work with this nonprofit because that one might somehow take something away from them. Or I don't like that person because they want a grant that I wanted. And so all of that energy right. doesn't help. And I'll tell you, all of that energy and the fighting and, well, but you're talking about autism, but you didn't talk about Down syndrome, so I don't care. Okay. All of that energy has to stop because that confuses yes. the brains.
And I think, you know, one of the things too, and we can do a whole other one on this about, because I think this is really important as well, which is what I have experienced is that in the social services world, and part of the disability world, because part of disability world is part of that, is that there is a mentality of the pie is only so big. Right. And so, you know, I need to get my piece of the pie. What is really cool about social entrepreneurship and startups and what we've seen is that we can actually expand the pie. When I left, you know, when I left working for the state for 10 years, people said, well, there's no other job that pays as much as this. And I said, well, then I'll just have to create one that pays as much or more, because if there's no other job, then I'll have to just create something else. And, you know, I had a lot of, you know, fall on my face and get back up. But the reality is today, I couldn't afford to go back to that job, right? After being in place, well, there's no job, you know. And so grant funding is excellent. You know, all of those things are great. They're important, but we can't have the mentality that the pie is only this big. You know,
I agree.
Right?
I love the book. It's an older book, but it's really a great book. The Blue Ocean Strategy.
Yes. Yeah.
And it just has always spoken to me. And it's like people are fighting on the shore over scraps when you've got the whole ocean out there, you know.
That's right.
And I just always thought that was interesting. And I'll tell you also, Doug, I think this is probably one reason why we're such good friends, but you and I are similar in a way. I know that when I was, you know, ready to join the workforce, I got a corporate job with a corporation that still exists. So I'm not going to say their name, but they're an amazing company. Love them, love them, love them. Wonderful company, good supporter of people with disabilities. And they're a huge telecommunications company. So I'll let you figure it out. But so I worked with them when I was like 19 years old, and I made a lot of money. At that age, a lot of money. I didn't have a degree. I just started working, and my mom worked there, and my mom hooked me up. So I went in and started working for this telecommunications company, and I hated the job. I hated the job. I hated going every day, but I noticed a lot of the other people hated the job too. And so I got very curious about that, and I started asking them, if you hate your job, I'm a naive 19-year-old. If you hate your job, why do you stay? And they're like, oh, well, because my son's in college, because I have my car, because right. my house. Right. And I thought, so, and I get the son in college, I get support in your family. But I remember thinking, well, then I'm just going to get a cheaper car, or I'm not going to get a house yet. I did not want to have to be tied to a job I hated.
Right.
Even though the company's great, I just didn't like this particular job. I didn't want to be tied to something. And so what I did was I quit this very lucrative job after a year. And I became a waitress, and I actually love engaging with people. And my mom was so mad at me, You threw everything away. But what I realize now, much, much, much later, 50, no, not that 40. Anyway, I won't do the math. Many years later, is that I've always done things differently. I always have. Right. And I've got to love what I do, or I don't understand why I'm here. Why are we here? Because recently, you know, family members have passed away, friends have passed away. Right. And I think, what is your legacy? What are you leaving? What are you? Right. And they're leaving wonderful things, Doug, but please don't ever ask me to do work that I don't believe in, because I just can't do it.
That's
and
right.
So once there's a lot of people like this, Doug, right? And so so it's real easy to say all this. Don't take a job unless you can make a good salary or you're part of the problem. I hear all that, Doug. What do people have to do? And we know what corporations need to do. Before you answer that, I just want to share something. I found this great report on World Economic Forum, and it's entitled, What is Social Capital Value and How Do We Measure It? And they talked about impact investing, shifting from cause marketing, which links donations to a nonprofit, to buying something, to advocacy branding, which rewards people for doing something, such as volunteering. They mention how valuable, and you mentioned some of this, Doug, the explosion of crowdfunding, which democratizes philanthropy. Ooh, got a little tongue-tied. Uh-huh. And allowing people to support projects with modest contributions, spurring funding of social enterprises worldwide, which is what you said. And I think that's so beautiful, and we're starting to see, you know, elections, political things happening like that.
You know, Bernie Sanders and Barack Obama, and absolutely a lot of that stuff was crowdsourced.
Yes. So it's the people speaking. And one thing I want to say to all the people speaking, which we are too, that are contributing.
Right.
We got to stop this. Somehow we got to stop this upside down world. And we've got to stop valuing just a celebrity because they happen to be beautiful. Gosh, I'm so glad they're beautiful. Right. And maybe they're a talented actor, but really reward the people that are really changing people's lives. There's so many examples, the people that are fighting for human rights, working at the UN, the people working in developing countries, all of us. And the one thing the report says is that two of the biggest trends impacting business today are social responsibility, and they're saying, of course, social media, which is true, but they're saying with social responsibility, they're also calling it social opportunity, which I like.
That's right.
But they say they're very, very intrigued. They're just totally linked. And I wanted to throw out some of the problems, because then we're all going to wait for you to answer all these questions. Get ready. So they call it opening the black box on good. Some of the problems, and I jotted down a few others, but measuring outputs rather than outcomes, which is a major problem, because we can manipulate outputs, but what is the outcome? What is the real social outcome?
Right.
Rewarding compliance rather than innovation. That's a huge problem in the United States.
That is a big problem. Yes.
Yeah. We sue everybody. You're not accessible. It's not good enough. I had one of my clients, and I won't mention their name. They would not appreciate me mentioning their name, but they're a wonderful, huge corporation. I think they have about 365,000 employees all over the world. And they put out an employment app to really help the experience for disenfranchised workers. And they put it out. And the very next day, somebody showed up with a disability and a lawyer saying, you know, yeah, most of it was accessible, but there was this one place.
We gotcha.
And if you and if that's the attitude and that you're always looking to get me, you're going to get me on something. I'm going to do my best to defend myself. But that is a huge issue. It is about compliance rather than innovation. There's a big brand getting a lot of, you know, kudos right now about employing people with disabilities. And they're a wonderful brand and they deserve all the kudos. But the numbers of people they've employed are so tiny. And then I was talking to a brand that I'm going to have on the show called Flex, or somebody, they used to be called Flex Technologies, and they've got 300,000 workers. They have been employing people in China and India with disabilities, thousands, like 2,000 plus in each of those countries, and having these amazing success stories. So luckily, they're not afraid to come on and talk about their success stories. But so we have things happening, but it goes back to, what are we rewarding? Are we rewarding compliance rather than innovation? There's also a lack of transparency. And I love this one. I agree with this, and I don't know how you fix it, but a lack of universal currency to ascertain the amount of social capital that is being created. So there's, it's, you know, we know that there are problems. We know that people look at, sometimes are looking, you know, nationally or very locally as opposed to what's happening globally. Well, those people that are in trouble over in that other country, that doesn't impact me. No, guys, we're one world. So,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah. But so I'm going to give a few examples of what they suggested, and then Doug, please jump in. So they said things that have to happen is we need to have some tools. We need to make sure the tools are agnostic, so everything can be covered, very transparent. It does need to be data driven. It needs to be universal. We're one world. Actionable, which I totally agree with. And if they say that equipped with those founding principles, they really think that, you know, we could do even a better job. And I know it's going to happen, Doug, because the millennials are going to make sure it happens. That's I feel very confident about turning the world over to the millennials and the generation behind the millennials that are now entering the workforce. Yeah. And these people are amazing. They're really amazing souls. I'm very excited about where we're going, even though it's a little scary some days where we are.
No, I agree. And, you know, I just want to say that, you know, if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, you know, I do want to help change the dialogue from one about compliance to one of innovation and empowerment, you know, that one of the things you can do is to support the program by going to patreon.com/HPAW for Human Potential at Work. So it's patreon.com. Let me make sure I'm spelling it correctly. patreon.com/HPAW. And, you know, help us continue to do this work because, you know, I think Deborah, you really are leading the way on this conversation. And I agree with you. You know, it's not inspiring. Compliance is not inspiring.
Yeah.
Compliance doesn't move the cause forward. Compliance doesn't get us a better world, right? It doesn't get us where we're going.
Right. And hoarding. I was talking to my son the other day and we were talking just about some, you know, looking at the landscape. And he said, well, in what I see, Mom, is a lot of people are so nervous. A lot of individuals and the corporations are acting the same way. They're so nervous that what they're going to do is like, okay, I'm going to take the money that I have and I'm going to protect my family because I'm scared. I don't know what's going to happen. And the corporations already, many corporations don't have a budget for disability inclusion or accessibility. They don't really even have a good budget for diversity and inclusion.
Right.
Now, I think another thing, and that's another program that we really need to rethink with diversity and inclusion is, seems almost like everybody falls into diversity and inclusion now, except my son's group. And
everyone has a diversity story.
And so it's getting so watered down. And also, once again, what's happening as these challenges happen and the fear and funding issues, the diversity and inclusion programs are getting, they have no budget.
Well, that's part of the problem too, isn't it? I'm just going to call BS on that. when someone says, well, our inclusion program is cut. There's not an inclusion program. You know, it doesn't work that way. You know, you've got to bake this into the culture of your organization or you're not going to exist anymore. You know, you can easily, I mean, Starbucks, I think they did the right thing. I think they responded correctly, but they were one misstep away from, I mean, there was a Starbucks in every corner in America, but Starbucks could be gone tomorrow if people feel like they are not committed to inclusion, right? If they are a company that doesn't value what other people value, they'll get their coffee somewhere else and Starbucks will go out of business like that. And they know it. So to say that's a very, very limited perspective, you know, to say, well, I only have, you know, it's like saying I can only take 5 breaths a day and today is not one of those days. So I'm going to hold my breath until I pass out. I'm sorry. There's just not enough time.
Well, and you know what? I also applaud Starbucks. Starbucks has done amazing thing for the community of people with disabilities. Amazing things. They are employers. Yeah. They're also doing wonderful social good. They actually did a funding for social good to make sure that growers that were actually growing.
They've done a lot of good social entrepreneurship.
Organic.
Absolutely.
I know. But you're right. That was a bad, bad situation in Maryland. It was a bad situation. But I was very impressed with how they responded. We're going to shut down every single one of our stores.
Right. But that's because Starbucks.
We're going to have training.
That's because I think Starbucks had experience with social good. So if you're a company and you say, well, you know, 2018 is just not our year for corporate social responsibility. 2018 is not the year of inclusion. We're going to become inclusive and do inclusion branding later on down the road. There may not be a later on down the road for you.
Right. Which is so interesting to say, Doug, because I'm a lot older than you, but I remember these gigantic companies that I knew of as a kid. I mean, they were always there. They were always there. Yeah. And when they started tumbling down for different reasons, it was shocking. Yeah. I remember I live outside Richmond, Virginia. Anybody remember Circuit City?
Yeah, that's right.
Circuit City.
Oh my God, I miss Circuit City. Yeah, I really.
Yeah, they were a huge employer in Virginia.
Now it's like a Mexican restaurant near me.
I know. We loved them, but unfortunately, they failed. And then, Best Buy came in and just kicked them to death. Well, who's going to Best Buy? It's very interesting. The world is moving very fast, I think all of us need to stop and say, okay, well, that's not working. And let's try this. We'll try this. But I know that, and I know you're the same way, Doug, and a lot of our listeners I know are the same way, and that I'm not giving up on social good. I'm not doing it. I don't care if I have to starve to death. I'm going to make a difference
for this is the
rest of my life.
I mean, this is the future. I mean, think about for yourself if you're a listener. Do you want to be associated with a brand that stands for nothing other than making a profit for the shareholders? I understand that making a profit for the shareholders is the primary responsibility of a corporation, but it's not enough anymore. I mean, it's just not enough. You want to marry somebody who says, I promise to keep our union, you know, moving along at a steady pace. You know, right. I will never cheat on you and I will pay the mortgage. Okay, that's great. Those are nice things that I'd like you to do, but that is not sufficient to get me excited about spending a lifetime with you, right?
good analogy, Doug. It's a good analogy.
It's not sufficient.
Yes. And, you know, I don't want to imply that. Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of customers in the U.S. and they're wonderful and everything. I just have seen a trend lately that
there
is
needs to be a shift in the narrative. It's not about beating up on any one corporation. It's just that this is what we're noticing is happening. And that, you know, I think what we're saying is there needs to be a shift in the story. And in this,
I agree. And also, just like it's always been, if you're better at telling your story than somebody else, then, you know, there's some brands that have some powerful stories they're telling right now. God bless
That's
them.
Right.
I use some of those examples in my book, Inclusion Branding. I mean, there's some good things happening. I just wish more corporations would join the conversation and want to truly not only include people with disabilities and other disenfranchised people in your workforce, but make sure that all of your products and services are accessible to all of us. Right. I don't know why anybody would do anything different from that. Right. And like you said, this should not be a budgeted item. This should be a way of doing business, but it isn't only about the people with disabilities. It's about other communities. So if your corporation chooses to, you know, focus, you know, there's so many ways that you can give back. But if you're not telling us your story and engaging with the different communities, and right. I don't know how any brand could not be engaging with the community, people with disabilities. In the United States, 1 in 5 people identify as having a disability, and they have families.
That's right.
So we know there's 1 in 3 families are impacted. It's probably higher.
And we have and we've talked about this. We have an aging population, so it's not as if
much higher.
It's not as if it's a I have a disability. I don't have a disability. I don't have a disability.
Right. Yet. Right. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Tell your stories. And those of you that aren't corporate brands that are wanting to make a difference, please don't let them stop you. Don't let money stop you. Figure out a way to do it. Figure out how to be heard. Figure out how to make a difference, because humanity is at stake here.
That's right.
It's at stake here. And so I appreciate you having this conversation with me, Doug, and I appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you.
It's amazing how much has changed since we did first, you know.
Oh my gosh, Deborah, it has changed so much. The world has changed so much.
Including, you have a 13-year-old, you have a little daughter that celebrated her birthday, Eleanor, and you have a new baby girl on the way.
I know, so not too much.
Yay! That's right, not too much. But well, thank you all. Thank you all for listening and contributing your comments and for everything you're doing to make a difference. It's the only way we're gonna get this right is by really supporting each other. That's thank right. you. Thank you, Doug.
You've been listening to Human Potential at Work with Deborah Rue. To learn more about Deborah and how she can help your organization, visit RueGlobal.com. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast, Human Potential at Work. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.